Reading tonight is from Joshua chapter 5, beginning with verse 1. So it was when all the kings of the Amorites who were on the west side of the Jordan, and all the kings of the Canaanites who were by the sea, heard that Yahweh had dried up the waters of the Jordan from before the children of Israel until we had crossed over, that their heart melted, and there was no spirit in them any longer because of the children of Israel. At that time, Yahweh said to Joshua, "Make flint knives for yourself and circumcise the sons of Israel again the second time." So Joshua made flint knives for himself and circumcised the sons of Israel at the hill of the foreskins. And this is the reason why Joshua circumcised them. All the people who came out of Egypt who were males, all the men of war, had died in the wilderness on the way after they had come out of Egypt. For all the people who came out had been circumcised, but all the people born in the wilderness on the way as they came out of Egypt had not been circumcised. For the children of Israel walked 40 years in the wilderness till all the people who were men of war who came out of Egypt were consumed because they did not obey the voice of Yahweh, to whom Yahweh swore that he would not show them the land which Yahweh had sworn to their fathers that he would give us, a land flowing with milk and honey. Then Joshua circumcised their sons, whom he raised up in their place, for they were uncircumcised, because they had not been circumcised on the way. So it was, when they had finished circumcising all the people, that they stayed in their places in the camp till they were healed. Then Yahweh said to Joshua, "This day I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you. Therefore the name of the place is called Gilgal to this day." Now the children of Israel camped in Gilgal and kept Passover on the 14th day of the month at twilight on the plains of Jericho. And they ate of the produce of the land on the day after the Passover, unleavened bread and parched grain on the very same day. Then the manna ceased on the day after they had eaten the produce of the land, and the children of Israel no longer had manna, but they ate the food of the land of Canaan that year. This is the word of the Lord. Please be seated. At this point in the narrative, the nation of Israel has crossed over the Jordan through the miraculous stopping of the waters by Yahweh. And we saw last week that he directed them to memorialize this event, both with a monument on the west side of the river, as well as one within the river itself. And the people were always to look back to this as a signal act of redemption, just as they were called to look back to the Exodus from Egypt as such an act by the Lord on their behalf. And what we see in tonight's passage is that the Lord is giving a new start to the nation. It is a passage of renewal in preparation for the conquest. And we're going to look at it in under three headings. First of all, fearsome news. Secondly, the renewal of circumcision. And thirdly, renewal of Passover. Fearsome news, renewal of circumcision, and renewal of Passover. First of all, the fearsome news, and we find that in verse 1. Chapter 5 begins with a statement about the impact of the Jordan crossing on the kings of the land which Israel was entering. We read, "So it was when all the kings of the Amorites were on the west side of the Jordan, and all the kings of the Canaanites who were by the sea heard that Yahweh had dried up the waters of Jordan from before the children of Israel until we had crossed over, that their heart melted, and there was no spirit in them any longer because of the children of Israel." The reaction of the kings to this fearsome news shows continuity in Yahweh's dealings with Israel, once again linking the Jordan crossing with the earlier Red Sea crossing. The Song of Moses in Exodus 15 celebrates Yahweh's deliverance of Israel from Egypt through the Red Sea, and it anticipates the fearsome news going before Israel in such a way that all the inhabitants of Canaan will melt away, Exodus 15:15. Now, we've already seen that fulfilled in Rahab's conversation with the Israelite spies recorded in Joshua 2. Rahab, speaking of she and her fellow inhabitants of Jericho, says, "We have heard how Yahweh dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who are on the other side of the Jordan, Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. And as soon as we heard these things, our hearts melted. Yahweh had promised all the inhabitants of Canaan would melt away, and Rahab gives the news that that's exactly what's happening, because they know Israel's approaching, and they know what Yahweh did for Israel, both in delivering them through the Red Sea and then conquering those two kings. Now the news of the Jordan crossing has the same impact as that earlier news on the kings of the land. We're told in verse 1 that their heart melted. And what prompted this reaction was recognition that this was also the great work of Israel's God. They heard that Yahweh had dried up the waters of the Jordan from before the children of Israel. Now these kings knew that Yahweh had parted the waters of the Red Sea, that Israel had defeated kings in their path. Now Yahweh has again miraculously led Israel through a water obstacle, and this time they are the kings in Israel's path. So they put two and two together. Children, what do you get when you put two and two together? What does two plus two equal? Two plus two equals four. But you know what? In this case, when these kings put two and two together and they thought about the Exodus and they thought about the Jordan crossing, they said two plus two equals fear. Maybe they knew German. For them, two plus two equals fear. The kings reason that if past is prologue, they were very vulnerable before the Israelites who were being led by Yahweh. And we're told there was no spirit in them any longer because of the children of Israel. And what this meant for Israel was that the promised land was ripe for the taking. The kings themselves were trembling in fear at the coming Israelites. However, there was need for further spiritual preparation before the conquest would begin. We saw preparation before they crossed Jordan, and now there's yet more. And this involved the renewal of two signs of Israel's status as the covenant people of Yahweh, circumcision and Passover. Both of these would be renewed prior to the beginning of the conquest. So we begin with the renewal of circumcision as we find it in verses 2 through 9. Verse 2, at that time Yahweh said to Joshua, make flint knives for yourself and circumcise the sons of Israel again the second time. Now, what does that mean? One who has been circumcised can't be circumcised a second time. You can figure that out yourself. The problem was that these sons of Israel had never been circumcised, and that's explained to us in verses 4 through 6. And this is the reason why Joshua circumcised them. All the people who came out of Egypt who were males, all the men of war, had died in the wilderness on the way after they had come out of Egypt. For all the people who came out had been circumcised, but all the people born in the wilderness on the way as they came out of Egypt had not been circumcised. For the children of Israel walked 40 years in the wilderness till all the people who were men of war who came out of Egypt were consumed because they did not obey the voice of Yahweh, whom Yahweh swore that he would not show them the land which Yahweh had sworn to their fathers, that he would give us a land flowing with milk and honey. So the picture is that when the Israelites left Egypt, all the males had been circumcised. However, during all their years of wandering in the wilderness, none that were born during that time had been circumcised. After Israel's faithless failure to take the land when they were at Kadesh Barnea, Yahweh had issued a punishment. And we find it in Numbers 14, 29 through 30. The carcasses of you who have complained against me shall fall in this wilderness, all of you who were numbered according to your entire number from 20 years old and above, except for Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. You shall by no means enter the land which I swore I would make you dwell in. So now, after that 40 years of wilderness wandering, that first generation, those who were 20 years old and above at the time of the Exodus, have all died off. And now the second generation, which includes those born during that wandering, have risen up, and none of these males have been circumcised. Now I want to stop and reflect upon that. What was circumcision? was the sign of the covenant that Yahweh commanded to be placed on the flesh of all males descended from Abraham. Listen to the command given to Abraham in Genesis 17. And God said to Abraham, "As for you, you shall keep my covenant, you and your descendants after you throughout their generations. This is my covenant which you shall keep between me and you and your descendants after you. Every male child among you shall be circumcised, and you shall be circumcised in the flesh of your foreskins, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and you. He who is 8 days old among you shall be circumcised, every male in your generations, he who is born in your house or bought with money from any foreigner who is not of your descendant. He who is born in your house and he who is bought with your money must be circumcised, and my covenant shall be in your flesh for an everlasting covenant. And the uncircumcised male child who is not circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin, that person shall be cut off from his people. He has broken my covenant." So significant is circumcision in relation to the covenant that God can say of it, "This is my covenant which you shall keep." Remember, we saw that sometimes the Ark of the Covenant could be called the Ark. The covenant was a similar thing is being said here of circumcision. It can be sort of summarized as the covenant itself. Furthermore, it was not an optional activity that Abraham's descendants could choose to take or leave. If a male child had not undergone the cutting ceremony of circumcision, he was to be cut off from the people. Thus, the failure to circumcise males born during the wilderness wandering was a significant sin and a sign of the sad spiritual state of Israel at the time. And it is particularly ironic that this failure occurs under the leadership of Moses. Why would that be? What had Moses himself failed to do? Anybody recall? Right. He failed to circumcise his own son. And it nearly cost him his life. We read about that in Exodus 4. Yahweh has at this point called Moses to go into Egypt, and then a strange thing happens on the way. We read in Exodus 4, 24 through 26, "And it came to pass on the way at the encampment that Yahweh met him," that is, met Moses, "and sought to kill him. Then Zipporah," that's Moses' wife, "took a sharp stone and cut off the foreskin of her son and cast it at Moses' feet and said, 'Surely you are a husband of blood to me.' So he," that is Yahweh, "let him," that is Moses, "go." Then she said, "You are a husband of blood because of the circumcision." After such an encounter with the Lord for his own sin, one would think that Moses would remember the significance of circumcision. And yet the practice was set aside during the wilderness wandering. And despite what some commentators suggest, there's absolutely no indication in Scripture that the Lord told them to set it aside. In disobedience, his covenant people refused to bear the sign of the covenant. And that wrong had to be righted before the conquest of land. In obedience to Yahweh, we read in verse 7, "Then Joshua circumcised their sons, whom Yahweh raised up in their place, for they were uncircumcised because they had not been circumcised on the way." Now, to put it mildly, this put Joshua's fighting forces at something of a disadvantage. Verse 8, "So it was when they had finished circumcising all the people that they stayed in their places in the camp till they were healed." This would have been an opportune time for the Canaanites to attack. Recall the story of how the sons of Jacob avenged the rape of their sister Dinah in Genesis 34. I won't review that tonight, but you probably remember it, or you can read it on your own. But one of the things we learn from that story is that newly circumcised adult males are not prepared to defend themselves. So what kept the Israelite warriors under Joshua's command from suffering a similar fate? Well, the hearts of the kings and the people of the land had melted in fear of Yahweh. The God of the covenant protected his people as they renewed the covenant of circumcision. This was part of their spiritual preparation for taking the land. We read in verse 9, "Then Yahweh said to Joshua, 'This day I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you.' Therefore the name of the place is called Gilgal to this day." Commentator John Currid explains what the reproach of Egypt likely means. He writes, "It may be related to the shame and disgrace that the Israelites incurred by being slaves in Egypt. Now they are free and are on the verge of securing their own land. The reproach of Egypt may also refer to the taunts, jeers, and general abuse that the Egyptians had heaped on the Israelites when in servitude. That abasement is all gone now. The Hebrews are in the land of promise, and they bear the sign of their covenant relationship with the Lord. The Lord is their master, not the Egyptians. And so significant is this rolling away of the reproach of Egypt that Yahweh names the place Gilgal, which sounds very, very similar in Hebrew to the verb meaning to roll. So the town's name would ever be a reminder of the Lord's faithfulness to his covenant promises, both in delivering his people from Egypt and the reproach they experienced there and into his land of promise. But circumcision was not the only covenant practice that had been suspended during the wilderness wandering. So we turn next to consider the renewal of Passover. Circumcision was a covenant sign given to Abraham for all his male descendants. Passover was a covenant meal given by Yahweh to the Hebrews on the eve of their exodus from Egypt. It derives its name from the way Yahweh passed over the houses whose lintels were marked with the lamb's blood when he struck the firstborn throughout all Egypt in that final plague. If they had obeyed his commands, if they had taken the lamb of the Passover, if they had put its blood on the doorpost, they were passed over. Their firstborn were spared. And this was the prelude to Israel's deliverance, which began the very next day. But Passover was not to be a one-time event. It became a key annual celebration on Israel's calendar. Commands at its institution particularly anticipate its celebration in the Promised Land. We read in Exodus 12, 24, and 25 of Passover, "And you shall observe this thing as an ordinance for you and your sons forever. It will come to pass when you come to the land which Yahweh will give you, just as he promised, that you shall keep this service." Now, the Passover was celebrated a second time 1 year after the Exodus from Egypt. When Israel reached Mount Sinai, Yahweh commanded them to celebrate the feast according to its prescribed rites and ceremonies. That's in Numbers chapter 16. And that's the only record of the Passover being celebrated between the departure from Egypt and the entrance into the Promised Land. Joshua 5 then records the fulfillment of Yahweh's promise given in Exodus 12, 15. "It will come to pass when you come to the land which Yahweh will give you, just as he promised, that you shall keep this service." And that's exactly what they did. Verse 10. "Now the children of Israel camped in Gilgal and kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month at twilight on the plains of Jericho." While we are given no details of this celebration of Passover, it surely must have been a time of great joy and recognition of Yahweh's faithfulness to his promise. And Passover frames all their experience in the wilderness. It was initiated in its celebration on the eve of the Exodus, and it is now celebrated on their arrival in the land. It forms something of a bookend to the entire experience. And this also marked a transition in Yahweh's provision for them, verses 11 and 12. "And they ate the produce of the land on the day after the Passover, unleavened bread and parched grain on the very same day. Then the manna ceased on the day after they had eaten the produce of the land, and the children of Israel no longer had manna, but they ate the food of the land of Canaan that year." So they celebrate the Passover on the day it was to be celebrated, and then we're told the next day they ate of the produce of the land, unleavened bread and parched grain. And this reminds us that the day after Passover was to begin the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Now, we're not told that they celebrated the full seven-day feast here. That's not clear. The key thing is, though, that they have a new diet. And it's diet of the fruit of the land that they have now entered. Verse 12 reiterates, "They ate the food of the land of Canaan that year." They have wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. During most of that time, they have been fed by manna, but now, in that year, they're eating of the fruit of the land. No more would they be on a manna diet. All those best-selling manna cookbooks could be put aside. Manna had first been given to Israel before they arrived at Sinai. It had been their miraculous provision for 39 years. Though they had sometimes complained about it, this bread from heaven had sustained them when otherwise they would have had no food. But it was always intended as the Lord's temporary provision. And it ceases now that he has delivered them into the land. We read, then the manna ceased on the day after they had eaten the produce of the land. And the children of Israel no longer had manna. And no doubt there were great cries of rejoicing at their change of diet. God had been faithful in the wilderness. Their journey to the promised land was complete. And now its conquest lay ahead. But one of the great lessons of chapter 5 of the book of Joshua was the importance of the identification of the people in covenant relationship with the Lord. Those signs of the covenant, those celebrations of the covenant, in this case circumcision and Passover, had been neglected. They had been set aside. But if they were going to go forward into the land, they needed to do so self-consciously as those who are in covenant with God by His grace. And that is how we need to live as well, self-consciously recognizing that we are in a covenant relationship with God through the grace that He has shown us in the Lord Jesus Christ. And we too have our reminders of that. We too have our covenant signs in baptism and in the Lord's Supper. And each time we participate or each time we observe these sacraments, we should be reminded of our identity and we should be encouraged. Because just as the Lord was faithful in overcoming all the obstacles to deliver His people into the promised land, so He will be faithful to build His church, to build His kingdom, against which the gates of hell will not prevail, and ultimately to deliver us one day into a new heavens and a new earth, in which all sin will be taken away, and we will dwell with Him and serve Him and enjoy His presence forever. Let us be reminded by this text of our great covenant God and the privileges and promises that are ours in Jesus Christ.